over again, and you've all been fine. The trick is that most people, when they do hypnosis, some of them disassociate people too quickly, and they fail to use terms like feel good. See, I always attach everything only as fast as you can feel good, that your unconscious will go and find these places where you can speed up your inside in comfort. The importance of attaching good feelings to everything is number one, it avoids ab reactions, because you can get some wild ones. When I first started doing hypnosis, nobody had told me about it. I read about it in a book, and I thought, ab reaction, what could that possibly mean? And one time I had I had an experimental hypnosis group with college students, and this one guy, I did a thing we did, we made up a double induction where you do it kinesthetically like this. Some of you have seen it. We did this, and we let this guy's hands go down and told him to sit all the way back in the chair, and he began to writhe around spasmodically in the chair. And I looked down and I thought, what the fuck is this? Right? And I looked over and the guy who was my partner at the time was spasmodic around going, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I thought, God, it's contagious. So I reached over and I said, now, the more you begin to have any spasm, the more you'll relax. And he did. Whenever you have anybody who starts to go into anything unpleasant, and this is whether they're conscious in a trance or whatever, the more pattern is great. The more you try to think about unpleasant child memories, the better you'll feel about how much you learn from them. And know that the more you try to feel bad, the better you'll feel, in the understanding that the older you get, the more experience you have. So the more you try to stop yourself from preventing the fact that there's nothing else left to do but feel good, you will. Yeah, write that down, will you? Yeah, excuse. What was that third word? That's the advantage of that. See, you got the machine in your head that will generate all this stuff. You just need a little practice, that's all. Overloading the conscious mind is a very valuable tool. Whenever you have people who take too many notes. Because the more you try to take notes, the more you're going to say, fuck it, inside your head. And realize the notes won't help. What helps is what goes inside your mind and what you learn from. And besides, since this is a trainer's training group, we're going to make available for those of you who want to take notes, you can get the tapes, take the notes off the tapes. Otherwise, when you go up to teach, your hand is always going to lock in this position, and you'll go like this. We want the learnings on the inside, because the more you try to stop yourself from preventing the fact that you're not after being ahead of or before or in the middle of anything that's not necessary. Temporal predicates and negation. Stack as many of as you can think of in the same sentence, and the more you try to remember it, the more you won't. Now, there's no need to not try and do things in any other way other than the easy way. Because if you try to complicate things, you'll be preventing yourself from beginning the process of starting. I always loved that one. When you use predicates that all have to do with beginning, it ends up with being afterwards. You ever thought about that? Don't prevent the fact that you're not going to start to begin. To end too soon after the fact of denying an impossible actuality and utter clarity. See what I don't mean? Well, now that your mind is twisted... Okay, I wanted to spend a little time this afternoon, given that you have this new state of consciousness, now we want to be able to amplify it and use it. And I want to do it with some preparation for what we call nesting loops. Now, I know that they gave you a binder, and in that binder or booklet or whatever they gave you is supposed to be, although I haven't looked yet, a thing called nested loops. And if it's not in there, it doesn't matter. I'm going to teach it anyway. Nesting loops is... a phenomenon, those of you who've done computer programming will recognize the term, is that what happens is, inside of information processing, is that very often in computers they need to make decisions. So they start what's called a for loop. And what happens is that you end up going and making something, you go something is equal to X, and then you go X equals, and then you have a whole loop that goes around to establish the meaning of what X is. Now, sometimes you might, inside of that, have another for loop and another for loop and another for loop. Some of these things nest pretty deep. What they found out is if you violate nested loops, what happens is your computer collapses and dies, right? The program explodes and the data is gone. Now, this is much akin to the way that when most people teach, the way they bounce back and forth between ideas, they violate nested loops, and what happens is it creates amnesia. And not the kind we want, because amnesia for your problems is one thing, amnesia for the information. I worked for an ad agency. I was hired initially. They hired us to do the weirdest thing, because they have these things called Burke scores. There's two kinds of ways they rate commercials. They rate them with Burke scores and with Nielsen scores. Now, the Nielsen scores make sense to me. They go into a small town, right, and they wire up all the stores in town so that when you buy some product, it electronically goes into the Nielsen thing. They actually show the commercial at a prearranged time and find out if there's a response to it in the next couple of hours. Now, this, of course, is somewhat expensive. So the next best thing they use, quote-unquote, is Burke scoring, which they've used for years. This is where they show on Thursday night during a TV show. So, you know, there's a TV show on, Star Trek is on, and on the third commercial in Star Trek, they show one time a commercial, brand new commercial, which is not actually out. They're testing the commercial. They then call the next day on the phone and say, were you watching Star Trek? If you weren't, they hang up. If you were, they say, do you remember anything about the commercials? Did any of the commercials you saw stand out in your mind? And if you say no, then they start prompting you. They go, they'll tell you about the commercial that showed just ahead of it. They get down to the point where they virtually tell you the commercial, and they have this way of marking to see how much of it is memorable. Now, they showed me 10 different commercials, and actually I was with John, and they took us into separate rooms, showed us these commercials. And boy, talk about high security. I have been like in the Central Intelligence Agency's secret file rooms, and it was easier to get in there than it was to get in these ad agencies' secret file rooms. So they took us in there, and they showed us these commercials, and they told us first that they wanted us to see if we, to rank them for what we thought would be in terms of being something that people would remember. Now, John got them exactly backwards, which is more interesting than getting them wrong, if you think about it. John got stacked them, but he had them exactly in order, but he had them backwards, thereby having the least memorable as the most memorable. I had them stacked in order exactly the way they came out in the Burke scores, except I had two turned around, and they were only a couple of points apart. Now, when they came back in, they were very confused about how we were supposedly doing the same thing and getting different results. And I said, we're not doing the same thing, and we don't get the same results. And I said, now, the fact that John believed that this was the way it would come out had to do with what's memorable for John. John has things a little different than the rest of the planet. John used as a way of doing it, John used linguistics patterns, and I used submodalities. John didn't know about submodalities at the time, and I didn't tell him. He was very, very involved in doing deep research into linguistics patterns at the deep structure level. And the thing about the deep structure in linguistics is, listen to this, it's deep structure, surface structure. It's exactly backwards. If you think, any of you have done any linguistics, you ever noticed that? Why is deep structure and surface structure, what are they doing to these linguists? And they're teaching them also to be able to translate from meaning to lack of meaning and stay there. Right? This is what they're doing. They're teaching our children this now in elementary school. So we're going to end up with a whole generation of people that, while you talk, parse your language in their head. Doesn't strike me as profoundly useful. It's hard enough to get them to listen as it is. To me, the way I'm doing it is I'm using heavy metal music to teach spelling. What? That's right. So Boris is in there, heavy metal music spelling. Da-na-na-na-na. See, you get a... And a big A appears. And then... And a B appears. And then this cartoon character comes out, all dressed in heavy metal thing, and kicks the A over. Goes, it's just a fucking vowel. Give me a consonant, man. You got a consonant pipe? Hey, I don't know about you guys, but that Beavis and Butthead is definitely, you know, a cultural comment on our times. When the the characters. You think about it now. It's you know, it's the Simpsons, you know, the fuck up family, Beavis and Butthead, the fuck up twins, right? And these are the idols of a generation. Man, I wish I could screw up that well. You know, whatever happened to smart people? Nah, no, you don't want to be smart. You want to be stupid. Highly valued in this culture to be stupid. And very successfully so, I'm afraid. Now it's time for us to turn all of this around, because what we want to be able to do is to get it so that we can put complex patterns inside of people's minds by being able to nest things inside themselves in a way that works. So just when they think they've lost track of what's going on, suddenly they begin to understand. See what I mean? Now, the way we're going to start this is I want you to realize there's a trick. Now, when I say we're going to end up nesting 11 deep, there's a reason for that. And it has to do with how we're going to keep track of it. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to sit down with your partner, and I want you to take a piece of paper, and I want you to pick 10 different things that have happened in your life, that each one, that if you told the story, would elicit a response of some kind. Now, it could either elicit a response or it could have in it information. For example, if you were going to be somebody who worked with, let's say, school teachers, because there's a great need to train school teachers. I'm afraid there's far too little education going on in the learning domains in this country and in ours. In the U.S., it's absolutely disgusting. The worst learners of all are teachers. And I mean, I wouldn't even do in-service training anymore. I wouldn't even bother, right? Because they don't even want to be there. They make them go, and then you go, look, you know, you have a chance to learn to do things in a new way. And they go, oh, God, give me a break. It's been now 20 years since I pointed out how to easily make people good spellers. There's only one state in the United States that uses it. One. Just one. Colorado. And there aren't even any people there. And the ones that are there are suffering from lack of oxygen. You know, humans weren't meant to live there. Sheep were meant to live there. You know, every time I go to Colorado, I walk two steps up, and it's like, you know. And then I look at all these pale people. You know what? It's the only state in the United States where there's a two-month waiting list to get into massage school, because everybody there is hurt from falling down. Chiropractors have long lists. Everybody you see has got a bandage on somewhere. And you go, how did that? Well, fell off my bike, fell off the steps, fell off of this. I go, you guys need to wear tanks like divers do with oxygen, right? So you can walk around and go, okay, ready to go down the steps. There is such a thing as too little of something important. However, they are smart enough that they figured out that it's easier to make pictures of words. And if you tell kids to make pictures of the words when they're learning to spell them instead of memorize these, the great spelling instruction. Also, where do they come up with the concept that words come in grade levels? This has got to be in fact, all knowledge. Who came up with this stupid idea? Because, in fact, it doesn't matter how many letters in the word, it's still just one picture. Oh, you mean the more letters that are in the picture, the harder the picture is? That's a great post-hypnotic suggestion to give all children. It's one picture. If you can make a picture of the bionic man jumping over a fence, if you can make a picture of Darth Vader in all his great detail, you should be able to throw a few letters up there, I would think. But no. Analogically, they poison the children. They go, well, these are fifth grade words. Dun, 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 dun. Analogically, they program people to have that. Now, to me, the two things that you have to learn to do and nest together, one is a strategy and the other is the chain. That whenever people come up against something, you want them to go right into the state and have the skills they need. So what I want you to do is we're going to start. I'm not going to start you with both hands at once. We're going to keep it easy here. What I want you to do is to pick five responses for whatever you teach or whatever it is you do, because I consider buying a learning event. By the way. Well, I do, you know. If you don't learn while you're buying, you definitely will learn afterwards. I consider that a salesman, and see, I think this is funny, the largest profession on the face of the earth There are more salesmen than everything else put together. And you can't get a college degree in it. You can get a degree in poetry. This is what he really meant. How many of you have... I always like to jump up and go, no, he didn't. And they go, he meant what he said. No, 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 no. There's deep hidden inner meaning in poetry. Then you have to go to school. You can get a PhD in poetry. Think about it. You can get PhDs in music. You can get PhDs in history, which is the only thing they change every 2 years. But you can't get a degree in the largest profession on the face of the earth. They act like there are no skills in it, like there's nothing going on. And that's not true, because a good professional salesperson always educates the person and refines their decision strategy. Now, so to me it doesn't matter what it is, but the thing that is underlying every strategy is the ability to install a chain, because you always want to beat the chains that are there. When people walk up, you can see that they've been bruised by, so to speak, hacks in the profession. When I was selling cars, people would walk in. If you even walk up to them, they have the wrong response. That's why I tried things like I wore a priest's outfit one day. Well, you get a whole different response when you do that, you know. It's like, you know, especially from Catholics. Boy, whew, they're mean. But, you know, the rest of the people, hello, dear. The rest of the people, it's my wife, she dropped by. I know what that means. We've come for your wallet. That's good. My wallet has a mind of its own. That's why I had to chain it on. It goes, oh, Paula's here. Oh, boy. Quick, let's go. Let's get out of this boring place. It's just a comb. The comb stays. The wallet goes. Right. See, I learned this from Billy Graham. Billy Graham one time, a lot of you may not think this guy's got good chops, but Billy Graham, out of all of them, has got the verbal skills. He said, now, there's something all of you are about to do which will bring you closer to God. Ooh. What a thought, huh? They did, too. You should see, man. They just reported it on. They came in one time when I was in Cincinnati. All these reporters came running in and ran down to the stage with lights and all this stuff. And they were shining them. And I mean, it was just like this. And I said, what the hell are you doing here? This guy goes, you're not Billy Graham. And I said, no kidding. You know, it turned out he was in the next room. I had 5,000 transactional analysis people. I keynoted their national convention. And Billy Graham was next door taking money from people for God. And I don't know about you guys, but I always thought if God wanted more money, he'd just make it. It just struck me. And if he was going to send somebody for it, it sure wouldn't be Jimmy Baker. I mean, maybe he'd send Billy Graham, but Jimmy Baker. Where did he get the idea? Disneyland environment for religion? Do you guys know about this thing they've sent him to jail for? They sent him to jail. He made this theme park. It was a God theme park, right? Like every day at 4 o'clock, they had a guy dressed like Jesus water skiing across a lake. And then they had rides like Dante's Inferno ride and stuff. And then they had condos there. It just turned out that he sold them 4 and 5 times. Well, I guess they figured, you know, it was a religious thing. No one would mind. But as it turned out, he's doing like 20 years. As it seems like there was a lot of money missing. I don't know what he spent it on. But anybody who had an air-conditioned doghouse, an air-conditioned doghouse, why not just bring the dog in the house? Right? And, you know, real gold things on your sink. Gold's too soft for that. You don't want to use gold for that. Go out and buy lousy things and live in total opulence, right? And then have commercials about how there are starving people in Ethiopia. Yeah, but they don't eat gold faucets, you know? Get a break. But anyway, he looks a lot happier now in his cell with the big black guy. And he does. I saw pictures of him on TV the other day with the black guy with his arm around him like this. And he was just there, big smile on his face. Looks happier than he ever did before. I don't know whether he has nightmares or not. Long eyelashes. You know, if you're going to get your makeup, you're not supposed to get it at Sherman and Williams, I don't think. It's just one of those things. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to go, and what you're going to do is you're going to pick 5 events in your life that you think, if you describe, you can make them up if you want, 5 things that you describe that will elicit a response. What I want you to do is to write down a chain, and I want the chain to end up with hope. right? Because you need to start people with where they are. People start out skeptical. Only this time I want you to get from skeptical to hopeful. Because this is the main thing you need to do to motivate audiences, is to take them to the point where they have wantant hope, right? Where they understand the fact that things being impossible in no way mean they're going to stay impossible. Now, once you've written down five things, make up your own little chain, just like we did, because I'll tell you the trick about making chains is always start with the end and the beginning, pick the middle, and then pick the two things that will get you either way. That's what makes it easy, because it's too hard to jump from being, you know, not there to being there. So pick something in the middle that could go to either. And then you pick one that will lead you here and one that will lead you there. Then pick some story that you can tell, because then what you're going to do is you're going to sit down and tell these stories, right? And I want four people in a group, and I want you, because I want you to make this stuff up quick. Remember, you know what happened, and you know what response you're after. You've been practicing getting responses. Trust yourself. As soon as you have the five things, I want you to go, this is my hand, okay? Now, what you're going to do is you're going to start the first story, and you're only going to tell half of it, half or more, but at least half you want. And then I want you to shift and go off on a tangent to the second story. Tell part of it, go off on a tangent to the next one, off on a tangent to the next one. And then I want you to tell all of the last story, and then go and finish this one, finish this one, finish this one, and finish this one. And you'll know where you are because you have a hand. Right? The trick is start, all the way through, finish. Should be pretty easy. Right? Don't get stuck here. And don't get stuck here. Get stuck here at the end. Got it? Okay, go ahead. And what I want you to do is I want you to take about 10 minutes to make yours up, you know. Just make up the thing in your own mind separately. Then get together in groups of four. One of you get up and ram through this. You don't have to make them gone with the wind things. You know what response you're after. So just go and get the response. Back. Remember, this is just preparation. Yes. That's how you get the states, is by telling the story. To elicit the state. And what you do is you go up to the point where you know you're going to get the response, where you get the response, then you shift so that when you come back to it, you can get the response back. You don't want to break these things in half. You want to just finish the story because you want to chain it together at the end. You tell most of a story, most of the next one, most of the next one, you know, and so on. And then you go through, finish it, get the response, finish it, get the response, finish it, and get the response, so that you tie those things together. The unconscious understands this. It knows they're all going inside each other. It knows how to process information this way. That's why it taught computer programmers to do it this way, so that machines could do it just like people do it at the unconscious. Remember, all programming in machines is a mirror image, just like all mathematics. Mathematics is the behavioral science. All of the things that you've learned to do, all the NLP things, are all mathematical models that I've just zipped off from here and there. I mean, the compulsion blowout is catastrophe theory. It's from how sheet metal and bridges are things. The phobia cure, which blows things out, is from another form of mathematics. I've taken all the mathematics we know that are reliable because they're mirrors of our neurology, not mirrors of the world. Right? So once we take them back and start doing behavioral things with them, that's why they last as opposed to come out in other symptoms. Unless we want to use the gardening theory of personality, which I don't like because too often we have a frost. Oh, but it does. Those people who tell those theories, and then you plant a seed and the seed grows up, and you go, what about the frost? And they go, don't be playing unconscious wars with me. I know how to do battle. Okay, 10 minutes of prep. Make it real quick. Just get your list together. The idea of the story is trust your unconscious. You have a language machine. Get in groups of four or five. One of you stand up, tell the stories, and anchor it as you go along. Let's go. Trust.